Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Roger Marsh with your host, child psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. In just a moment, you'll hear the remainder of a riveting discussion on the devastating effects of addictions. What does it mean to be addicted to something?
To be an addict to something means you're a slave to it. It means that you can no longer control it. You have no choice over it. And there are many behaviors that become so powerful in controlling you that you can no longer control it. The television addict says, I'm going to sit down for half an hour and watch television, and 5 hours later is asleep because he cannot move away from that television set. In the long run, though, the addiction has to be damaging to be a true addiction. No matter how often you do something, if the long-term consequence of that is not damaging, we can hardly talk of it as an addiction.
That was the voice of clinical psychologist and popular author, Dr. Archibald Hart. Today, he and Dr. Dobson explain the dangers of addictions and how those struggling can find healing. There's a lot of content today, so here's the conclusion of this broadcast we've titled Examining Addictive Behaviors. You're listening to Family Talk, the radio division of the James Dobson Family Institute.
We were talking about Dr. Hart's book, Healing Life's Hidden Addictions, Overcoming the Closet Compulsions That Waste Your Time and Control Your Life. Yeah. We missed having you here when the book on anxiety came out. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go back and pick that one up sometime.
Well, I have a copy for you.
There's an awful lot of anxious people out there.
Yes.
But getting to this one, Life's Hidden Addictions, we probably ought to review just for a moment or two. What do you mean again by hidden addictions?
I mean that the addiction is hidden because the behavior itself is socially sanctioned. We don't think there's much of a problem with certain types of behavior, and yet beneath those behaviors could be the form of an addiction. It's hidden in the sense that these are the addictions that people never think of as addictions. And then thirdly, it's hidden because I happen to believe that many of the behaviors that drive our addictions may have some underlying biochemical basis for those addictions. Time will tell whether I'm right, but I think for some of them, I can make a very strong case that it's the biochemistry of the body, inappropriately triggered and overused, that can be the basis for a hidden addiction.
All right, let's start today by talking about the most dramatic addictions of all, the obsessive-compulsive behaviors. Mm-hmm. Describe what obsessive-compulsive behavior is. Give us some examples.
Well, obsessive-compulsive behavior, in the strict clinical sense, is different from an addiction in that obsessions, compulsions have to do with pain, whereas addictions have to do with pleasure. Now, the pleasure of addictions may have to do with stimulants or tranquilizers. But obsessive-compulsive behaviors are driven by pain, Jim. Let me illustrate. I believe there are people who shop excessively who are compulsive shoppers, and there are people who shop excessively because they are addicted to shopping. And the dynamics are different for those two mechanisms. In the addiction to shopping, the person uses the shopping as a lift to give them an oomph, to give them some stimulating behavior. Maybe they are in a boring relationship, or they have so many problems that they feel overwhelmed. They don't know how to deal with them. So they hit the shop. They take their money and they go and buy whatever they can to get an excessive a lift coming out of that. Someone told me just a few days ago that she went and spent $3,000 that she doesn't have recently because she was so sick and tired of all her family problems. Everybody's getting on her back. Mm. It was the only way she could cope with that. It gives her pleasure. But there's a compulsive shopper, and the compulsion is different. For compulsions, strictly speaking, we're talking about pain. Here is a person who can't resist, who, unless they buy something, tension rises, anxiety increases. They've got to give expression to it. And so most of the obsession and compulsion behaviors have to do with relieving pain in some way. And so by engaging in the behavior, they relieve the pain. I think this is true for some of the sexual behaviors. I think there are sexual behaviors that are addicting. Pornography can be addicting for many people. But there are certain people that I have encountered who have an obsession and a compulsion for pornography that comes out of this pain mechanism. for whatever reason, to punish themselves, to hurt themselves. I mean, why else would a pastor, a deeply committed, devout Christian pastor, be so hooked on pornography sometimes? It doesn't give him pleasure, but is driven out of this compulsive need, and the only way he can relieve his pain is to reach for some pornographic literature.
Relate that to the person addicted to infidelity. It's not just the search for a new relationship.
Not
they
always.
They are driven
not
to
always.
Find the forbidden fruit.
Yes, and sometimes that activity is addicting in the sense that it gives pleasure, gives an extra boost, an extra high.
And because for a moment.
For a moment, yeah. But because the behavior is taboo, it's condemned, it takes on an extra thrill and excitement to do something that's illicit. You see, that can be addicting. But then there is the illicit behavior that comes out of the compulsive urge. It's a pain that they want to relieve, and they've got to do it.
Yeah.
It's like the person who can't leave a home without going back a dozen times to see that, make sure that the stove is turned off.
Now, when obsessive compulsive behavior is at its most extreme, it absolutely dominates life, doesn't
it? It does. It shapes the way you think. It's compulsive, and that's why compulsions and obsessions go together, because you may be engaging in behavior that's compulsive, but you also have all these thoughts that are obsessing. So you lie awake all night, and you can't think about anything else. It is just something that dominates your thinking, and you can't let it go.
For the benefit of the family member of an obsessive compulsive person, or one who is addicted on a strange behavior, like shoplifting, for example, try to put into simplest terms an explanation of what in the world is going on. Here's this person who doesn't need the item that they're stealing. Mm-hmm. And they've been arrested repeatedly, and they've paid such a price for that. Mm-hmm. Why in the world do they go back and do this over and over and over again?
And here, this behavior has some similarity to addictions in that the mechanism underlying this behavior is usually some form of escape for the individual. They have a pain, an emotional pain, some problem, something, a carryover from their past they can't quite get a handle on. Or their life circumstances could be so miserable, so unhappy that this behavior then becomes an urge. And the more they try to resist it, in the obsessive compulsions at any rate, the more you try to resist something, the more the urge is there to do it. Something has gone wrong with the way you approach these sorts of activities. And you feel the urge, and the more you resist and the more it's condemned, the more you want to do it. And I think that it's important to make this differentiation.
Which is more difficult to treat?
I think the compulsions are more difficult to treat than the addictions. Because the compulsions involve deep psychological mechanisms that go way, way back for the individual. You could go back and maybe find a child abuse situation or a sexual abuse that this person is not willing to confront openly, and yet there's a pain deep down that then drives you to compulsive behaviors as a way of relieving that pain.
Arch, you are describing now circumstances that almost put the individual who's addicted, or the obsessive compulsive individual, in the category of being a victim. And yet in your book, you refer to sin as a basis for addictive behavior.
Absolutely. All addictions ultimately are aspects of sin, of violating your life before God. And I don't want to sound deterministic, but there are certain people who've lost the element of choice. And I'm thinking more in terms of the compulsions here than I am of the addictions. See, for me, addiction is always a behavior of choice. Always. Mm. The fact that you are dependent on that physiologically or psychologically, to me, is irrelevant.
Even chemical addiction?
Even chemical addiction. There is an element of choice. There's a time when you have got to take responsibility and say, no, I must stop. Now, that may be painful.
I absolutely agree with that. And yet you will hear the wives of alcoholic men and vice versa say, he told me he would never do it again any minute, and he went right out
right
there
back and did it. But it is a disease of choice, though. I must say that when I turn to the compulsion behaviors, I have a lot more sympathy, because now it's not so much the choice I'm going to make. Do I not turn to this behavior? Do I stop doing this? You are reaping the consequence of behaviors that were patterned many years ago. Now, the only element of choice at that point is to seek treatment and to make sure that you have the necessary safeguards. And there is a sense in which we are responsible because we could turn to and reach for outside help. We can set up accountability. We don't have to be the victims of that urge. But I think it's a different mechanism to the addictive mechanism.
Arch, have you ever seen an extreme obsessive compulsive individual, one who will wash his or her hands, for example, 25 times in a morning?
Until they've washed all the oils out of their hands. Yes.
And they're just wrinkled. They're just damaged from the water or, you know, 1,000 other compulsions.
I know a mother who, you know, the children have not finished eating. And she's standing there hovering, waiting to whip the plate away to get it in the washer and off the table. They are people who collect things, obsessive compulsives, who I saw some pictures the other day of a man whose whole apartment, three-bedroom apartment, lives by himself. He couldn't open the front door. I mean, inside it was piled high with stuff that he was collecting. He cannot throw anything away. It's too painful for him, you see. Now, that is not an addiction. I think we misunderstand it. If we label it as an addiction, that's an obsessive compulsive disorder.
All right. Your book promises to help us overcome closet compulsions.
Yes.
The addictions that dominate our lives. How so? Give us an overview of that release.
Yes. I think that since I come at it very specifically from a Christian perspective, I believe that all healing begins with God. All healing begins with getting your life right before God. I mean, there can be no healing until you get that in place first of all.
And you don't mean that if you're a Christian, you won't have these
problems. No. But I think that but it's got to be in that context. And I want to say that because there could be listeners out there who have these problems, but haven't really begun to think in terms of the more basic issues of life. Yeah. Because in all these disorders, in all these sorts of problems, you've got to be able to increase your ability to cope with life. And the starting point has got to be the denial issue. I think as with substance addictions, hidden addictions, denial is at work. In fact, that's what would characterize a true addiction. The person says, that's not a problem for me. I can control it. I can stop this. I can stop looking at that pornographic literature any day I choose, and yet never, ever chooses to stop. Just try it. People who smoke, I can stop any time I want. Denial is at work, Jim, and it's at work as powerfully in these hidden addictions as it is in any other form of addiction. And that's the starting point. You've got to come to the place of accepting that I need this help. Now, how do you know whether you have a hidden addiction or not? I think you have to be sensitive to what those around you have to say. I think you need to ask a spouse, ask a child, ask a parent. Give me some feedback. Tell me, do you think that this is out of control? And I sense that I do it a lot, but is it an addiction? And then from there, begin to move out. And I think that the first step is to recognize that you need help from the outside. And this is why I think nearly every addictive program that has been successful is a program that recognizes you've got to reach for help outside of yourself. Now, I don't like the notion of a higher power. I don't need that at all. I think God is ready and willing to step in personally to help you. And you may very well need a spiritual resource to overcome your hidden addictions, even more so than a substance addiction.
Because we talk a lot about the problem of pornography in our culture, we hear from a lot of women whose husbands are addicted to pornography. If such an individual came to you, and he'd been into pornography since he was 13 years of age and now is into violent fantasies and things that are very destructive in his relationship with his wife. What's your first step?
Well, the first step is to bring the help that person come to the place of accepting that they've got a problem. Because even when they come to you,
they're still not willing to admit it.
And until they admit it honestly and frankly and openly, and express a willingness to change, it's going to be very difficult to control them. So I work hard at that in that initial phase of overcoming the denial. Then I think one has to look beyond the behavior to determine what it is that this person is running away from. Why are they incapable of facing their real-life circumstances directly? In severe pornographic type problems, I think that we have another mechanism at work, and that is that engaging in that behavior is itself a stimulant that is addicting. That behavior gets their hormones going and gets their juices going and gets their body stimulated just as powerfully as a drug does. And one may have to go cold turkey and set up some system of control where you stop the behavior and you face whatever the consequences are and you resist that behavior as powerfully as you possibly can.
In the same way you'd go cold turkey in alcohol.
Exactly, yeah. No different. But you do it with a dependence upon God and upon God's Spirit to help you and empower you to do that.
And accountability to man.
And then accountability to someone else. And this is why to think that you can overcome these addictions by yourself, I think, is foolish. You need to set up some system of accountability. You need to know that there are people out there who are praying for you and who will be hurt by your failure. And then perhaps you can get enough control going.
All the sexual addictions are difficult to treat.
They're all very difficult. And because it's such a complicated biochemical system that underlies them, you see. And they're also difficult to treat because often I think that we may be dealing with compulsive behaviors, not just addictive behaviors. Perhaps a mixing of these two.
I'm Roger Marsh, and we are a little over halfway through a fascinating discussion on dealing with addictions. You are tuned into Family Talk, and I want to quickly remind you how grateful we are for your continued support of this ministry. Learn how you can partner with us by visiting drjamesdobson.org or by calling our offices at 877-732-6825. Now, as we rejoin the broadcast, Dr. Hart explains how believers sometimes become addicted to their own religion. Let's listen in.
Isn't that interesting? And that there are people who really misuse their religious faith. And I'm not just talking about those other religions. I'm talking about Christians who misuse their religious faith and for whom religion becomes a form of addiction. And there are two aspects of that I could just mention briefly. The first is people who become addicted to religious ecstasy. You know, all around our country, there are people who every Sunday, every weekend are looking for some high, for some fix. They're gathering up all the problems of the week, problems they haven't resolved, problems they haven't even faced directly or dealt with, and then going for a fix on Sunday. And they go from church to church to church to church. No sense of belonging, no sense of responsibility, just hoping that they're going to get an ecstatic experience going for themselves. And I think that that can become a form of addiction.
When the search is for the experience in and of itself apart from the contact with God.
Yes. Yeah. And you see, I think it's whenever we lose contact with the substance of our faith, the substance of the addiction. I think, Jim, that when God meets somebody intimately and closely, there is an emotional upheaval. Mm. One can't help but experience it that way. But you can't tell me that that's the only way we worship God, or that every week you've got to have such an experience.
In fact, I have dealt with a number of people, and I bet you have too, Arch, who believe if they don't have that kind of experience every few days, that God's gone.
They haven't met God.
That He has rejected them.
They haven't met God.
That there wasn't anything to their relationship with Him.
Yes. I experienced this very early in my life. My wife and I, shortly after we were married, very close friends with another young couple whose whole pilgrimage was looking for a spiritual fix. Finally, they gave up on it, and to my knowledge today, they're not even Christian, because it was the experience that for them was the primary thing rather than the substance of it.
It would sure be easy for people to misunderstand what you're saying right now. Because Jesus did say, come unto me, all ye who labor and are heavy laden. And that's a fix, that's you know. A, well, he is saying, in effect, come bring your burdens to me.
But it put us in the context of a much larger concern that I have, particularly for us as Christian parents. Namely that I think we're an overstimulated society. I think that we depend on stimulation excessively. And this is a cultural milieu in which I think these addictions develop. We can't tolerate silence. We can't be alone. People don't have relationships with themselves. Day before yesterday, a fellow was telling me, I never want to be with myself alone. If my wife goes out, I pace up and down. I'm restless. I got to turn the radio on as loud as I can so that I don't have to think or focus on myself. I think there are people, and this is true in the Christian church, that there are people who can no longer worship God in the spirit of silence or quietness, who can only worship
meditation,
who never have time to listen to God, but want to experience the ecstasy of an encounter with Him.
I must admit that this is an area that I have a problem with, Arch. I like stimulation, intellectual stimulation, coming into my brain all the time. I'll have a tape or the radio or television or something going to feed my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And it is difficult for me to quiet that
mm-hmm.
down.
And I have this past year, I have very intentionally tried to choose time when I don't have anything stimulating going. In other words, I think the key word here is balance.
Yeah.
There are times when I want stimulation, when I want ecstasy. And I want ecstasy in my love for my wife and my experience of my wife. But there are other times when I just want to be still and quiet with her, where all I want to do is feel a soft touch and where we don't speak anything between us. And I think worship God and our experience of God should have some of that about it also.
There's a subject that will take more time than we have left, but it's so important, and that has to do with our children and getting them addicted on that adrenaline rush by whipping them back and forth to Disneyland and to 31 flavors for ice cream and all of these things, where they live on this exciting peak.
Roller coaster.
Yeah, right. Can you set them up for a lifetime of vulnerability to addiction?
I think we can. If you overstimulate your child through its formative years, that child becomes dependent on high levels of stimulation for its feeling of well-being. So it cannot tolerate boredom. It doesn't handle being alone very well. All the time, got to have the TV set on, got to have a radio on, got to have music going. And so, you know, what characterizes people today is walking around with headphones on their ears all the time.
That seems to me to be a major
problem. And I think it's
a
major concern.
You know, you imagine how different life was like 100 years ago when a kid was raised on a farm.
You heard the
loudest noise he heard was a cow mooing, you know, and long hours of quiet.
And music is getting louder and louder. And more beaty. We're shouting so loud we can't hear his voice. We have so many other distractions and stimulations going. I don't think we really know the difference between what is a true religious experience of God and our own adrenaline that's over-aroused.
Well, this is another book that you've written, Arch, that has great practical application. And I'm going to continue to think about what you have said today and last time. In my own life, there's an awful lot there that all of us can apply, and I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Jim, it's been good to be with you. Thank you.
A great reminder to focus on the voice of God and tune out the noise of everyday life. You've been listening to a classic conversation Dr. James Dobson had with Dr. Arch Hart here on Family Talk. go to today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more about Dr. Hart and his many best-selling books. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then tap on the broadcast page. Lastly, where do you find support on matters relating to faith, family, and culture? If you're unsure, sign up for Dr. Dobson's popular newsletter. Each letter is full of encouragement for your Christian walk and provides clarity on tough issues. For example, this month, Dr. Dobson has written about marriage and how you can build a lasting relationship with your spouse. We want you to receive this newsletter every month, and there's no obligation on your part. Simply call 877-732-6825, and a member of our team will be happy to get you signed up. That number again is 877-732-6825. Well, that's all the time we have for today here on Family Talk. Be sure to join us again tomorrow to hear a brand new interview Dr. Tim Clinton conducted with Dr. Tony Evans. They'll be discussing the sorrow the Evans family endured recently and how they celebrated God's goodness throughout. That's next time on another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Have a blessed day, everyone.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.